Welcome to the One For You podcast, where we've managed to cobble together a coherent episode, at least in like terms of films. Whether we will be coherent remains to be seen. So the two films we're discussing today make a good pair, as they are both about struggling, impoverished rural communities in the US. On the one hand, we have the adaptation of the best-selling memoir Hillbilly Elegy about the white working class in Ohio. And on the other hand, we have the Oscar-nominated documentary Hale County This Morning, This Evening, about an African-American community in Hale County, Alabama. My name is Olivia Chinomeo, and I'm joined today by Alan Motley.
Hi.
Hi. How? Yeah. Okay, hi. How's it going?
Good. I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I'm sorry for choosing Hillbilly Elegy.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess that's already like we can see where it's going. I think it's probably in line with what other critics have said about the film. But before we get to that, let's talk about other things that we've watched. So I just want to start because I watched something where I have to say, like, it's terrible. Guys, it's terrible. So as you probably know, you know, like, I have a soft spot for rom-coms, but, you know, like, they should be good. But, you know, like, over the last few years, like, Netflix has gotten into sort of the game of, like, these Christmas movies that used to be, like, for, like, Hallmark Channel and so on. So it's already happening, even though it's November. And they have a new one. It's called The Christmas Drop. And it's about, like, this Air Force base on Guam. And they do a yearly Christmas drop on the, you know, the islands. And they drop, like, generators and whatever the people need. But, oh no, Washington wants to shut them down. And they send out, like, one of their congressional aides. And then she has to, you know, go around the island with the Air Force pilot. And, oh, I don't know. Will she find her heart and also maybe fall in love with the pilot? I don't know, because I didn't finish it.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. It was so bad. I was, like, bored for most of it. And then I was like, I cannot even. So if you want to watch a Christmas film, don't watch that one. Watch a different one.
I mean, a friend of mine whose yearly tradition at this point, I think, is watching bad Netflix Christmas rom-coms, she gave me an entire list of, okay, this is the order in which you need to watch them.
Okay, that sounds very good. Could I please have access to that list?
Yes, I will send it to you.
Okay, thanks. So what have you seen? Something that you have, you know, something good? Or did you also stop midway through?
No, I didn't, actually. I watched the Netflix documentary Dick Johnson is Dead this week, where documentarian Kirsten Johnson is making a movie about her father, Dick Johnson, who has been diagnosed with dementia, and they band together to make a series of short sketches where she basically dramatizes how he dies from increasingly unlikely accidents. And Dick Johnson is just a delight of a person. And it's very sad, but it's also very joyous. It's like, celebrate life and also be very funny about it.
Okay, that sounds very lovely. Okay, so Netflix has like one good one, one terrible one. Okay, there must be balance in the force. Okay. But I think the force is going to be out of balance at a moment when we talk about Hillbilly Elegy. So tell us, Alan, what film have you subjected us to here?
I've subjected us to, as you said, Hillbilly Elegy, which might be, I don't know, summarized as acting the movie. So basically, it's directed by Ron Howard, and it's about JD. Who, as you've said, grew up in the white working class in Ohio, and the movie kind of skips back and forth between his childhood and his adulthood, and as an adult he is at law school at Yale, about to embark on a potentially life-changing job interview, but then he gets called back to Ohio because his mom, played by Amy Adams, has OD'd on heroin, and as he makes his way back and tries to navigate his childhood home as an adult, we get glimpses of how he grew up both with his mom, his sister, and also his very foul-mouthed grandmother played by Glenn Close. Yep. I think that's about as good an elevator pitch as I can come up with.
Yeah, definitely. And so, as I said in the beginning, it's an adaptation of J.D. Vance's memoir. Yes. And I think it came out in 2016. So mm-hmm. right at the time when the U.S. and the world were wondering, like, how had Donald Trump made it into the White House? And I think this is one of those books that sort of were taken as a way of explaining, you know, yeah. Oh, what's going on in the other half of the country that they made this decision? And so I think it became like a bestseller and everything. Mm-hmm. And now, again, 4 years later, when there was another election involving Donald Trump, we get this film. And I mean, as you said you called it acting the movie. And, you know, when you watch the trailer, because I rewatched it again yesterday because mm-hmm. I saw the film like a few weeks ago and I wanted to refresh my memory. And I mean, the trailer is terrible. I think it makes the film look way worse than it actually is.
Agreed.
Right? So yeah. If you think the trailer is terrible because it also has this schmaltzy, manipulative music, like the film is better than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't know whether it's great.
Yeah, I think that's about my take on it. It's like, from the trailer, you would definitely expect worse, but then also, like, watching the movie, it wasn't the kind of movie where I kept rolling my eyes and I'm like, this is so, like, manipulative or whatever. But ultimately, it's just, I don't know, it felt very clean. It felt very sterile in a way. Like, it just didn't grip me either emotionally or in any other way. It was just like, yeah, it's a movie and it's like, there's some parts that work, there are some parts that I think, oh yeah, this is quite sad, Glenn Close is selling this well. But then on the other hand, there's also a lot of, oh yeah, now it's that part where there's like a crisis and let's get to the resolution of the crisis because it's bound to come in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think you're right about this. So like you have two levels that work. One works well, one doesn't work so well. So I think on a story level, as you said, it's pretty basic. And, as you know, like you say, you know the beats that you know what's going to happen before it actually happens. And it goes towards a neat resolution, or the film gives you the impression that it's a neat resolution, even though I think if you think about where it actually ends, that's not mm-hmm. the case, but the film yeah. gives you the feeling that this is what's happening without going into spoilers. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of trying, it's sort of telling this all-American story of like individual success, you know, against yeah. the odds. And mm-hmm. it's sort of trying to give, you know, these rural communities some sort of pride and like the importance that they have. And that's, I guess, you know, why it's called Hillbilly Elegy. I mean, it's an elegy. And in the film, you also have glimpses of, oh, the elites are so disrespectful, etc., etc. But ultimately, I don't think the film has that much to say about this relationship in a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it gets me to the acting and somehow connected to this because they're all good actors. I think especially, so obviously Glenn Close, who plays the grandma, and Amy Adams, who plays the mother. And I also particularly like Owen Astalos, who plays the young JD. I think he's doing a good job. But especially with Close and Adams, so they have obviously been made to resemble the actual people. In the end, you see photographs and they do look like them. Mm-hmm. So that's well done, but feels in a way like dress up. I mean, all yes. acting is dress up, but this feels mm-hmm. extremely like dress up.
Very much so. And I think that's why I was more into Glenn Close's performance than Amy Adams' performance, because Glenn Close, even though like she gets the more outrageous get up, I think she just sells it a little better. I think with her, once I got past the, okay, this is Glenn Close in very elaborate makeup, I I felt kind of connected to her performance, whereas with Amy Adams, it's probably also down to the role, but with Amy Adams, I just kept having the feeling, yeah, this is just Amy Adams being very shouty, and, you know, relying on parched lips and splotchy face and being like, yes, let the makeup do more of the talking, let's say. Whereas with Close, I think Close managed to get beyond the like these surface level impressions, I think.
And this is a weird thing that I have too, and I had with Nomadland as well. There it's because you have Frances McDormand. Obviously, you know she's an actor. And then in some scenes you have people who actually lived are living on the road, right? So there was this element, and then it already felt like she also was, you know. I mean, I know to say acting is stupid in this context, but you know, it didn't feel in a way genuine, even though I think that's not the intention in either film. But it feels like, oh, Hollywood is coming to these places in a way. I mean, I don't know how else you would do this.
Yeah, though I think Hillbilly Elegy like doesn't succeed or succeeds less than Nomadland, because I think with Nomadland, due to having these, on the one hand, these actual people who follow this lifestyle, but then on the other hand, I think Hillbilly Elegy also, I don't know, it's one of those movies that kind of and in places mistake empathy for or rather the other way around, mistake commiseration and like the emphasis on misery, that they mistake that for empathy. Whereas with Nomadland, I never got the feeling of, okay, let's like look at these people, how poor they are, and let's feel bad about it. And I think Hillbilly Elegy, not the entire movie, but in places it kind of has that tendency, and that always makes me a little uneasy.
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously Nomadland is the better film. Just like, you know, this moment of unease where it's like, oh, someone is acting, and for, you know, I don't know, it's a weird thing. I don't know how else you would do this, because obviously you need actors to do the acting. But yeah. So I guess, I mean, I think it's like sort of what you would expect from a Ron Howard movie, right? It's like competently made, but yeah.
Yeah, it's, I'll probably not remember it in a week.
Yes, which is why I had to rewatch the trailer. So Hillbilly Elegy is not really one for us.
Not really. But you know, you can watch it.
You can watch it, definitely. So it's in cinemas in Switzerland right now, if you want to go to the cinema. And if you don't want to go to the cinema, it's going to be released on Netflix on the 24th of November. So if you want to, you could also wait till then if you don't feel the urge to see it at the cinema. Okay, and that brings us to our gem session. As always, there will be spoilers here.
Spoilers.
Yeah, well, in this case, I think it's possibly a mute point. So as we said, Hale County This Morning, This Evening is a documentary. It came out in 2018 and is directed by Rommel Ross and written by Rommel Ross and Maya Krinsky. And it follows certain people in the community in Hale County, which is in Alabama, and of course named after a Confederate soldier. yeah, and it was like, so it won a lot of accolades. It got a prize at the Sundance Film Festival. It got a Gotham Award, and it was nominated for an Academy Award as well. So yeah, it was like a success, I guess, which is in some ways surprising, because quite an unusual documentary. So it's not a documentary that is interested in narrative. It's more, I think, about experience. So it's an experiential film, I would say, because there's no plot as such, but you have impressions of people's lives. So it occasionally focuses on certain people. You have like Quincy and Boozy, who are a couple and their family, and you have Daniel, who's a young basketball player. So I think these are like the main characters, if you want to say that. But actually, that's probably saying too much, because basically, Ross, he lived in this community. He was there as a teacher, and I think also maybe a basketball coach. And he sort of just started filming when he got there in 2009. And he just, whatever comes before his camera, that's what he shows us, right?
Yeah. I think there's this one very beautiful scene where you have the smoke rising up in front of the sun. And then you get out of frame, you get, I think, him talking to somebody and somebody asking him, what are you doing? And then he's like, oh, I'm just going around filming things that I think are nice just here in the area. And then I have a little conversation about that. That's just about audible. And I thought that was like a very nice self-insert.
Yeah.
And I think that's that speaks to the appeal of the entire film. It's I've read people being critical of the approach because I think somebody said it feels like scrolling through a stranger's camera roll. And I mean, I guess I see where that point is coming from. But then on the other hand, I also feel like this mixture between experimental art film and cinema verite, if you want to call it that, is quite evocative, because it's so hard to describe. It's just like it puts you in a very special mood, and I think I really appreciate that mood where you just like basically look at life unfolding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's very personal, because it starts with this title card that says, you know, I got there and I started filming. But then it doesn't tell you like who this I is or why they're filming or who they're filming or whatever. So it's basically you're seeing the world through his eyes in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's a personal and I think in some ways also very subjective experience. And while that's probably true for all documentaries, this one doesn't hide it, but emphasizes it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's about how people are, you know, seen, because there are always like there's sort of movements, I guess, if you want to talk in music terms. So where there's always a little title card and there's either a question or a thought or something. And I think one of them is something like that I didn't write down, but I think it's something like how are we framed or something like that. So, yeah. So basically, I think it's also about trying to come up with a new narrative and new images about African Americans, and especially poor African Americans in the South. And to show sort of a different, different images away from stereotypes, I think.
Yeah, and I think by being so subjective, it then elides this tendency of like other films, like both documentary and narrative, to be like, oh, look at these poor people, let's pity them. In this case, it's just like, yeah, this is, as I said, it's life unfolding. This is everyday life, and this is how it is. And it offers you a glimpse that you might not have had before. And it also has this artistic note. Like I've seen it before, but this time I was really struck also by the sound design and the music, which does add a lot to some of the sequences, like the Whose Child Is This sequence, where you get this long, drawn-out, slowed-down version of somebody saying or shouting, Whose Child Is This? Like playing in the background of a scene that's just, I don't know, it's all very evocative. I don't know exactly what it evokes, but it evokes something.
Yeah, I mean, It's this weird mix of like the everyday and then also like the big catastrophes in everyday life, because Boozy and Quincy, they lose one of their children through sudden infant death syndrome. Is that what it's called? Yeah. And it's just like there, and it's part of it, and it's part of life, and then it goes on. But there's also this metaphysical element to it, almost. that I think comes in through the titles of the movements and also through some of the imagery. Like one I think that really stuck with me is where he's filming from underneath a basketball hoop and mm-hmm. you have the time lapse and you see like the stars moving, and you know, I think this is pretty evocative in the way that it that it talks about how the dreams and sports and specifically, you know, our way out in a way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that was really nice. Although sometimes I have to say, that doesn't always work, this metaphysical side. Yeah. And there are like certain shots that are held too long for me and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it probably might have even been maybe not more evocative, but maybe more, I don't know, successful or well-rounded to me if it had been like maybe a short film, or maybe it's a, let's say like a 45 minute featurette or something. But I mean, I'm willing to, you know, take these, the shots that, for lack of a better word, fall flat if, you know, there are the other ones that are super evocative. So on the whole, I'm not going to discredit the movie for, you know, not pulling it off 100% of the time.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a short film. It's like,
it is a very short film.
76 minutes.
Yes.
But I don't think you could have a film that's a film like this, having it be longer would be, mm-hmm. I think, hard to watch, because the first time I watched it, and I might already have talked about it a little bit once here on the podcast, because I watched it, I think it was last year during the Black Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And it was less of a fan, but I think mm-hmm. it's because I did not know what to expect.
Yeah, I think same for me.
Right. And now the second time around, where I know what is happening, I appreciate it far more than I did the first time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so.
That's fair. One for us.
One for us. Hail County, This Morning, This Evening, that you can find. Although I had a last minute panic because I was like, it's like not in the library as promised, but you can find it and watch it.
I rented it on Vimeo.
Me too. Yes, do that, guys. support this film. Okay, so before we get to the end of this episode, let's talk about films that we're looking forward to. And I think it's going to be Netflix films again, right? For both of us.
Is mine a Netflix film? I don't even know.
It is.
I know it's... Is it? But it does come to cinemas like yours, so...
Okay, tell us about it.
Okay, so I chose, or I am looking forward to The Midnight Sky, directed by George Clooney. I don't know that much about it, but I know it's kind of post-apocalyptic, and it's about space travel, and it's, I think, partially or entirely set in the Arctic. And I don't know, it's just, it reminds me of Ad Astra, and I liked Ad Astra, so I'm looking forward to that.
That's interesting that you're saying that it reminds you of Ad Astra, because I was thinking
maybe it's a poster, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe, because I was thinking about Ad Astra in a different context, because I was thinking about voiceovers, because Hillbilly Elegy has a voiceover that's annoying, and so does Ad Astra, even though I really like the film apart from the voiceover. Yeah.
Yeah.
True. Okay. So for me, it's also a film that's going to be first in cinemas and then on Netflix, namely Mank. Do we say Mank? Yes. By David Fincher. And it's basically about the making of Citizen Kane, right? Although I probably should watch maybe Citizen Kane first.
Yes. Yes, you should. Because I've seen Citizen Kane numerous times before, but the last time it's been a few years. And then I went into the press screening of Mank. I was like, I sort of like get all the, like most of the hints, I think. But then afterwards I felt like, I probably should just to be safe, rewatch Citizen Kane. And then I did in the evening, and I was like, it was probably would have been worth revisiting this before.
Really? Okay. Yes. Okay. Let's do it. That's good. That's a good idea. Also, maybe I think, you know, it's like really cool that Netflix is really sticking to this in Switzerland, that they're giving their films like a cinematic release before they show up on Netflix. I think it's really cool.
Yes.
Like, appreciate that.
Especially with something like Mank, which is very beautiful to look at.
Okay. So checklist, first Citizen Kane and then Mank. Okay. Yes. Got it. And that was it for this episode of the One For You podcast. Alan, thank you so much for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
In the next episode, we'll be talking about Fat Man, which is the new film with, what's his face?
Mel Gibson.
I have to say it was a week with not a lot of choices, so this is what we're going for. And our gem then will be The Long Kiss Goodnight. So it's going to be action films. To keep up to date with the podcast, follow us on social media where we're at One For You Pod. Hear you next time.
Bye.
Bye.